Morning. So we are here today talking about diffusing innovation across the domestic public health system and are thrilled to be here at APHA 2013. Neither of us have anything to disclose. So this morning we are going to talk through what is the current context that all of us in public health are grappling with and facing in this present landscape. We're then going to talk through an innovation process or a framework that we hope is helpful in shaping and informing how you can think about taking an idea from start all the way through to diffusion and broader expansion across the enterprise. And then we're going to wrap up and flip the context around a little bit and think about what are some opportunities that are actually present right now in that landscape that we're all working within. And how we're going to do that and what we hope you take away from this morning's session is thinking about what are those current challenges and opportunities broadly across the system, so that think global perspective. We're then going to describe this innovation process for identifying, assessing, sharing, and diffusing new ideas from various stakeholders. And then finally, with the act local component, with the focus on action, thinking about who are the key stakeholders, audiences, and other considerations for how to do this successfully kind of in our context. So again, taking it from that, let's think broadly, think global, but trying to bring that all the way through to getting action and making a difference on the ground. So as we're all aware, right now the public health system is facing unprecedented challenge. It's a very complicated and complex environment. First, how do we do more with less? With sequestration, with the congressional budget environment, with the resource limitations that I know that we're all feeling, how are we able to achieve better with less resources, with less money, less people, less ability to do the types of work that we've been doing for a long time? Second, how do we demonstrate and achieve improvements in health outcomes? So I think what we've heard a lot this morning is how do we get from kind of doing things in the traditional way and producing great outputs, and how do we take that all the way through to actually impact and achieving a change in mortality and morbidity over time? Third, health reform implementation is causing massive disruptions across both healthcare service delivery and financing, but there's also implications for public health and for governmental programs, state and local activities. So how do we manage and adapt to this brand new and very confusing landscape of health reform implementation? And fourth, from a people perspective, do we have the right people with the right skills and the right competencies and the right support to meet both this new landscape that we're operating within, but then also evolving health needs? So from New Orleans, we heard about violence, and there's kind of emerging health topics that are coming up. Is the workforce equipped to deal with non-traditional and new health challenges? And fourth, should we and how do we work productively with new and diverse partners? So again, the presentations this morning have talked about that broad range of stakeholders who are critical to have in such a transformational change effort. So how do we as public health bring them to the table and work together effectively towards a common goal? And in order to do that, the landscape and the broad picture that I want to paint is through a cyclic innovation process. So really thinking from a four-step perspective, how do we go from coming up with ideas all the way through to diffusing them more broadly across the enterprise? So first, thinking about idea generation, and this is something that I think we're all well aware government and public health does tremendously well. There's no shortage of new ideas, of innovative ideas, of great projects and thoughts and passion for what we can be doing differently to affect the populations that we serve. So again, I mean, this is an area that I think there's been tremendous success in coming up with those new ideas. The second part is kind of that selection filter. So through tools like what Margie talked about and others, how do you funnel down that universe of all of the new ideas into a few that have validity, have credibility, have likely applicability to the communities and the populations that you're working within? And what does that look like from both a transparency perspective and an effectiveness perspective, so that you know you're doing it well, but can also kind of justify how that process works? And then thirdly, the idea implementation. So this is taking those ideas that you funnel down through that sorting process and thinking about and coming up with kind of conversion and translation, so that you're taking the science and the research and the publications and transitioning them and transforming them into projects, into products like toolkits or how-to guides, into service delivery offerings, so things that you can actually implement in the communities that we're working in. And then the fourth part is the diffusion. So you've taken the new ideas, you've funneled down a couple, you've implemented them in the field, but then how do you take that and then scale it and sustain it more broadly? How do you diffuse that idea across the system? So what worked well in context A, how do you spread that across a region, a state, the country, and how do you do that in a way that is effective and not just, you know, taking a specific thing that worked well here and replicating it, but really diffusing it and making it more broadly applicable, more broadly effective? And that diffusion point of the process is traditionally and historically where there's been a lot of challenges and a very kind of difficult part of the process to be successful at, but the benefits of doing it right are critical, and that's what fosters the scalability and sustainability that really makes that long-term impact. So I'm not going to walk through, you know, the details on the slide, but the stuff on the how public health may think, I think what's common there is that's the traditional operating environment. This is the focus on very detailed planning, lots of data gathering, and tremendous research. But that locks in an approach that's very regimented in terms of how we're going to implement a project or a program, and it makes it hard to make adjustments. The part on the left, the how innovation can work, I think is, you know, I was really struck by the New Orleans experience, and this is that ability to make changes, to say we're going to have this massive transformation. It's very challenging and it's hard to do right, but we're committed to flexibility, to leading change, and to addressing and detecting and addressing issues as they occur. So, we're moving a little bit away from that, you know, locked-in execution, upfront planning, and more into we are going to apply some quality improvement techniques and some tools and some thinking so that as we get down the road, if things aren't working, we can adjust them and we can change and we can use that to leverage an impact on where we're working. So with that, with thinking about that process from coming up with ideas to funneling them down to turning them into projects and products, and then starting to think about diffusion, and again, kind of focusing on that's the challenging part, that's the hardest part, and that's also the part where there's most opportunity, I'm going to turn it over to my colleague, Darren Collins, who's going to talk more specifically about some of the tools and techniques to make that part of the process an effective and successful one.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Again, good morning, and thank you. The handoff is always that awkward moment where does that person know it's their last slide, or are they going to talk into your slide? So well done, David. So one of the things that we want to talk about in the context of innovation is stakeholder engagement. And what I want to hear from you about, hopefully when we get to the Q&A, because we're going to sort of rapidly accelerate through this presentation, is that, you know, the traditional view is sort of the more the merrier, and we tend to agree with that, but we do need you to leave here thinking a little bit more systematically about your partners and to begin to avoid this sort of one-size-fits-all approach as it relates to stakeholder management. That's a real prevailing view from the field, and I think our colleagues talked about this earlier. The other challenge we want to talk about as it relates to stakeholders and the way you think about innovation in the organizations that you come from is that many of you, whether you admit this or not, or whether we can go to the bar later and you'll admit this, is quite honestly there's a serious parochial view that many of you take about your work and your organizations. And it's this parochial view, quite honestly, that I think is sort of inhibiting innovation in a very direct way, and that your work is unique and what you're doing is unique, and this is a unique group, and, you know, if I tried to explain it to you, you wouldn't understand it. And I can assure you that I do understand it, and that we do understand it, and that people at this conference actually understand it, okay? And so as it relates to this continuum, many of you get this, you know, you've got sort of from left to right, you've got internal and external partners, and you've got sort of traditional and new partners, okay? Very, very simple framework to think about your partners and how you think about your work. And as you work from left to right, and again, I don't want to go into this in excruciating detail,
But the people closest to the work know what they're talking about, okay? And I'm going to say that one more time. The people closest to the work actually know what they're talking about. And oftentimes, as current and future public health leaders, we know better than the people actually doing the work, or we think we know better. And in fact, that's actually wrong. And what I want to encourage you to think about is that, you know, you need to recognize the value that those people bring to the table, the people that are, you're working with and that are closest to the work, and create opportunities for them to basically, you know, share what they know in a number of sort of systematic ways, allow them to try things and fail, and create sort of organizational certainty around that, because oftentimes it's, oh, we can't fail. No, actually, innovative organizations fail often, and they learn from their mistakes, okay? And you know, this idea is sort of, if you work below the line, there are things called learning organizations, okay? And how do you create sort of a leadership opportunity to create a learning organization, and how can we benefit from existing partnerships, okay? That's on the left-hand side. As we work to the right, you know, one of the things I've been struck by over the years is this sort of changing lexicon in public health, and I know many of you are familiar with this, but I'm happy to hear the word customer emerge more often than not as you think about and describe your work. It used to be, oh, the community and citizens, you know, they're customers. There's a difference. And that changing lexicon reflects that innovation is happening and something that I'm pleased to see. But as you think about that right-hand side of the page, you know, we need to think about, you know, creating feedback and establishing a connection with our customer using technology. We're in an unprecedented era of technological connectedness that allows us to connect and share ideas in new and novel ways. And we need to think about how to do that, when it's appropriate, and why that's important. And, you know, there's this idea of creating networks across partners. I think many of you understand that in order to do our work and the important work of public health, it really relies on networks of shared responsibility. That's how the work gets done, and how you manage those networks is critically important. And then as you drop below that line on the external side of this, you know, it's important that you understand the environment that you work in. I think Maggie probably said this best. You know your jurisdiction as well as anybody, and you know, you have to understand what will work in your jurisdiction. As you think about sort of financial modeling and some of the things that it takes to sort of the resource side of this equation, you know, we need to provide some stability in funding, right, to make these things go. It can't be sort of, hey, this sort of hand-to-mouth mentality oftentimes that we're faced with in public health, where there's funding, now you see it, now you don't. And I think there's some discussion about how to think about that. And then, obviously, you know, you have to generate interest and buzz. And as it relates to your work and many of these interventions that you're trying to sort of implement, because, you know, smartphones and tablet computers and other things have created a tremendous amount of distraction in our personal and professional lives. And I think sort of cutting through that clutter is going to be very challenging for you as future public health leaders, okay? And so as we think about the current context and new opportunities, I'm not going to go through all these in detail. But again, you know, we view partnerships the way you view partnerships. They're vitally important to your work. You know, it's a diverse and growing portfolio of partners, but you know, you have to, you know, not every partner is created equal, and you have to think of some systematic way to manage that growing portfolio of partnerships to yield the things that need to get done, okay? As it relates to workforce, and Laura's in the audience from the Rollins School of Public Health and others from the academic community, you know, I don't know if anybody's had a chance to sit with a recent MPH graduate recently, but their command of technology and innovation is pretty impressive. Yet they come from that academic setting, and we put them into an organization that really does not keep up with what they're learning, and they're trying to sort of, and those are opportunities, quite honestly, to infuse those ideas into these organizations, and I encourage you to think about that. David also spoke earlier about this need for sort of diff, you know, new and novel competencies. I think Jessica hit on this as well. You know, as we talk about health reform implementation, there'll be lots of sessions around this during the conference. We certainly see this as a major opportunity. It's disrupting the way we think about health. What is prevention in the context of that discussion, and what is your role as you attend and leave this conference to ensure that public health has a voice at that table? And I have some very interesting thoughts about that if you want to talk to me after this. You know, as it relates to outcomes, again, you know, you have to focus on those things that are important in your community, and, you know, outcomes are paramount. The CDC director, Dr. Tom Frieden, and other leaders within organizations, you know, it's all about outcomes, you know, moving the needle. What does that mean in your community? How do you achieve that? How do we measure it? And how do we tell people about our progress in a way that they can understand and share with people? Because we get into this sort of public health speak and we're not able to articulate what we do, how we do it, and why it matters. And then last, you know, we'll talk a little bit about resource constraints. Certainly there are changes in the way that funding is happening, and certainly there is a scarcity of resources, and David led with do more with less, but Jessica and I had a chance to talk before this session, and maybe it's doing, you know, less with less. And that's a political battlefield that, you know, many of you don't want to step foot on, but maybe that's, you know, you need to be prepared with data and information to basically arm your leadership with the ability to make the tough call, because, you know, I just don't see us continuing to take on more and more, okay? And so with that, we're going to end and open it up for questions. So thank you very much. Please.
From a perspective, what do you all, I'm curious to hear from everybody a little bit, what do you all feel are the greatest challenges or foes by the Affordable Care Act? That's a pretty subjective question, I get it, but I'm interested.
Can you say a little more about what you mean by the health administration perspective?
Well, I guess, I mean, in terms of implementation, in terms of these changes, in terms of personnel, like, I mean, I guess the point being is there's so many
Do you want to start, or do you want me to lead it off? Yeah, go ahead.
So I would see it more as a tremendous opportunity and less from the challenges perspective. I flip it from the very beginning. I think the fact that everybody is confused and everybody is disrupted and no one has read the law means that there's an opportunity for public health to come in and say, we want to define our role from the get-go. I mean, this has obviously been in the works for a number of years. It's no surprise that it's finally here, that the exchanges are live and open. But I think it's still early. No one's really sure what the impacts are going to be from a practice and from a service delivery and a reimbursement perspective. I think that opens up tremendous opportunities right now for public health to come in and think about, you know, what are the financial models and how are they being reinvented. So what types of services can public health get paid to deliver? You know, what is the public health viewpoint on care navigation and care coordination, and kind of moving down the scope of practice to community health workers, you know, registered nurses, and away from kind of the physician as the primary care provider. I think in terms of accountable care organizations, you know, there's a number of very specific communities who have been successful in fusing kind of a population health and prevention focus into an accountable care organization. So I think, you know, more to come on that as they're getting stood up. And then from a greater kind of public awareness of healthcare and the role of individual behaviors and environmental factors in health, I think it's a tremendous opportunity to kind of keep that conversation going and say this is the public health viewpoint on healthcare more broadly.
From the local government perspective, agree with everything that you said. One of the key questions to be asking is how can we leverage this as an opportunity to fund some of the services that are core to the work that we do. I'd also add that the community benefit requirement as it relates to not-for-profit hospitals is an opportunity that health departments really should be trying to take advantage of. That's some place that we'll be focusing in New Orleans, absolutely. And it's important to take that systems level perspective when thinking about this, which is a challenge because you come up against your own limited understanding of it and everyone else's limited understanding of it, so trying to figure it out. I would add that some of that is going to be location dependent. So in Louisiana, our governor has decided not to expand Medicaid. When we designed our transformation plan, we thought Medicaid was going to be expanded. So now we're taking on a very strong advocacy role, coordinating with the state and CMS to extend a waiver program that can expand Medicaid locally. So some of it is going to be dependent on your local politics as well. So for us, in terms of challenges, that was a big challenge related to affordable care as the decisions of the politicians.
Yeah, go ahead.
I certainly would underscore what's been said already. I think what I would add is, from my perspective, I think public health has a little bit of an identity crisis at hand here, and that it's an identity crisis for someone who didn't have a lot of ego strength to begin with. So I think there's this history of public health having kind of a chip on its shoulder about being not the doctors or not, there is that legacy, and I think one of the things that David said, and that certainly is true about the ACA, is that it kind of levels the playing field a little bit. Like, nobody really knows what the heck is going to happen, and that vacuum opens up an opportunity to be at the table together. I don't know who said it, but I love this, that someone said that if you're not at the table, then you're on the menu. So we have to be at the table. And the nice thing about some of the things that Jessica pointed out related to the community benefit, I mean, there are unique roles for public health here that the health system doesn't really want to take on and is looking for that partnership. I also think that we are going to have to find a way together as the health system, whether it's the public health system, the healthcare system, or all of us together, to solve the larger issues that we're all facing. And the role that public health can play in that as neutral convener, you mentioned, we are in the midst of a project, for example, simple example, at the Public Health Foundation, we're in the midst of a project that relates to antibiotic stewardship. And it emerged out of some work that the Institute for Hospital, the
Institute for Healthcare Improvement.
Thank you. The Institute for Healthcare Improvement was doing, that was a hospital-based approach to reducing the incidence of antibiotic-resistant diseases in hospitals. And we were faculty, we had a faculty member who was on that panel and realized that really, if you want to address antibiotic stewardship, you have to go outside the walls of the hospital, or you really are only chipping away at the problem a little bit. And so we developed a driver diagram, sort of like a root cause analysis approach to looking at, well, what are the drivers of optimal antibiotic use in the community? And of course, it reaches into educational systems, it reaches into pharmacies, it reaches into what you ask of your physician when you go see them. And what we've discovered is that by piloting application of this driver diagram in the community, we found ways to work side by side with healthcare in ways that healthcare would not have thought of going by itself, and that together we're sort of generating more than any of us could on our own. So that's a very small example of what could probably happen across the board in many respects. If you ask me what are the drivers of public health and healthcare collaboration, that's a very different kind of driver diagram. And we haven't built that one yet, but that's really the question at hand.
Where does the historic public health value of vulnerable, underserved people who are not privileged fit into this process? Because I know that as we move toward more of a financial bottom line model, then we just continue down the cycle of those who have are the ones who become beneficiaries of public health. So like nicer parks, we factor in the classic public health ethic of the underserved, the impoverished, the vulnerable, broadly defined, into the equation?
Yeah, I think I can. I'm happy to start that out. I think it's an excellent question and one that I don't necessarily have a canned response to. But my philosophical response to this is that I think that we need to change the way we think about health and prevention. Period. And I think that many of us in this room have understand that the perception of public health that it is health care for poor people. And I think we have to move way far away from that and think about this as an opportunity to sort of change the game to some extent, which is, this is about access to quality care regardless of socioeconomic status, period. So, I'd like to take that, offline and off the table, quite honestly. But I do see sort of the historic challenge that we're going to have given how entrenched we are into this sort of thinking, and I'm happy to take this a little bit offline because I think it's a great question, one that I don't have a simple answer to.